As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
In today's episode of the Sixers Beat, Rich and I discuss the Sixers' disappointing double overtime loss to the Chicago Bulls, which snapped their 8-game winning streak. Then go over what is driving Joel Embiid's recent MVP surge, as he appears to be the betting favorite in Vegas. Enjoy the podcast. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bodner, joined by Rich Hoffman on the Sixers Beat, part of the Athletics Podcast Network. We are recording this at maybe not the most opportune time in the world. We are recording this following the 109-105 double overtime loss to the Chicago Bulls, which snapped the Sixers' 8-game winning streak. But how you doing, Rich?
Derek, I'm doing fine. We're the Grim Reaper here, you know?
It really is.
It's time to podcast, and there's a bad loss.
Yeah, when you schedule a podcast, you can be sure they're going to play like dog shit the previous night. It's amazing. It happens. I don't know. It does feel like it happens a lot to us this year where it's like, all right, we got this one scheduled up and they lay up a stinker. But a stinker was probably understandable and due. A lot of times teams come back from the road and they kind of suck at home. I do think, because I didn't get a chance to rewatch all of last night's game, in part because Rich completely stunned me and wanted to do an early podcast, which, pulling back the curtain a little bit, Rich is not an early podcast kind of person. So I didn't get a chance to rewatch everything, but I think when I rewatched some of it this morning, it probably, like, my takeaways probably aren't as strong as they might have been. It was an exceptionally frustrating game to watch, but not one that I take too much away from, not one that really pisses me off, with the one significant caveat of we don't really know what's going on with James Harden's foot yet.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think in terms of that individual game, it's, look, here's why it is annoying, though.
Oh, the Sixers have played,
well, I mean, yeah, it was brutal to watch. And can I say, by the way, when the Sixers, I think Harden got that shot blocked, the double fist pump you threw out, not because you were rooting for the Sixers to lose, but because you were rooting for the game to end in one way or another, was
way to put me on the
genuine
spot.
It was as genuine as possible. It was, I mean, I was screaming at the beginning of the possession, shoot a three, you know, just end it one way or another.
My only rooting interest was for there not to be a triple overtime. I could not take 5 more minutes of that slop because that was slop offensive basketball. It was pain. It wasn't even like I'm tired and I want to go home. It was just like, I can't watch. This is really bad basketball and really frustrating. That being said, you know, I just said I'm not too frustrated or annoyed with that loss. It is a massive missed opportunity, though. Like, when you look up at their schedule coming up, all right, they got one more against the Bulls. After that, you've got the Warriors, and since it's a home game for them, they might actually be competent. Phoenix, all right, not Durant, but they're still Phoenix. Denver, you've got Milwaukee again, you got Boston again. All these teams might have something to play for, even Miami, a tough defensive squad. There is a lot at stake here coming down a stretch, and when you blow a game, and look,
That was arguably their easiest game left on the schedule, which, you know, I think for the Sixers, They've played so well that I'm not always that worried about their schedule. You know, good teams, bad teams, whatever. It's generally been fine. And when you just tend to not lose, it doesn't really matter as much how hard your schedule is. But it's just so Sixers that their easiest game left in terms of the worst team they're playing, and they're playing them at home. They stink up the joint. They were horrible. Like you said, it was completely frustrating to watch. And I think part of this is that they've earned this frustration, and that they've played so well, the race for the number two seed is a real thing now.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to be a real thing.
Me neither.
So I don't know. I guess when you do all the hard work of winning all of these games in a row, when you finally lose, it stings a little bit. So it's like, it's kind of like, were they due for a stinker? Yeah, probably. And I think in terms of the Sixers' level of play outside of the Harden thing, which we'll talk about, is there like a ton to be concerned about? No, because the last time they lost in Dallas, and their defense looked as incompetent as I've ever seen a defense look. And it was fine. Like they played eight really good games after that. So, it's a missed opportunity for sure.
They do have a way. They only lose like once every other week. But boy, that one game can leave a mark. They find the frustrating ways to lose every time. And this one, an offensive struggle doesn't frustrate me as much as like that Dallas game you referenced. Like when they just don't care and don't execute defensively, that frustrates me way more. This one, there were some missed shots. Like they shot sub 30% from three for a team that shoots over 40% on the season. That's big. You make one of those shots, just shoot 30%, you win that game in regulation. But the first half turnovers were just mind-melting breakdowns. That was a real frustrating part.
They couldn't catch the ball in the first
half. It was amazing. Any drive was like a 50-50 ball. It should not be a 50-50 ball when you have the ball.
See, okay, but that's the stuff where I'm thinking like, whatever. That has not happened once this season. So I don't know if the floor was slippery, if all the confetti raining down from the rafters, which is just an insane part of the Wells Fargo Center experience, and that, you know, ball boys have to run on the floor during games to pick up confetti.
It's like a ghost. It's like a ghost of the past.
Yeah.
Like you have to leave the confetti there.
I don't know what was going on. That was, you're right. It's not as frustrating. It's just weirder though. It's just like strange. Why is this happening? This never happens. I don't understand. Where is this great offense that we've become accustomed to? It's one of those things.
In case you missed it, I wrote about the Sixers potentially having the best offense, most dominant offense in the league. I wrote that about 3 hours, or I published that about 3 hours prior to one of the worst offensive games we've seen in years, especially for a team with expectations. That was a perfectly timed article. They have been playing truly exceptional offensive basketball. Like, I think the stat that I was looking at was 123.3 offensive rating since January 1st. Over that time, even against top 10 defenses, they were pretty much right at the same point. They're at like 121 against top 10 defenses, which is about 4 points per possession higher than the Nuggets or the Kings against top 10 defenses. So they were playing really good basketball. It's just it is. You do have nights, maybe not specifically like last night, because I feel like some of the details were unique to that game. Like you said, they couldn't catch, which isn't something you say very often.
All of them couldn't catch. It was wild.
And then you combine that with off nights, certainly from James Harden, an off first half from Tyrese Maxey, and overall just a poor shooting display. And it was, Joel Embiid had 37 and 16, and he was really the only, and he couldn't catch at various points of the game either, but he was the only reason they were even remotely in that game. They were a plus eight in his 44 minutes. He ended up fouling out there in double overtime. A little surprisingly, didn't really complain about fouling out.
No.
Seemed pretty at peace with it.
He's still mad about the Beverly call earlier.
Yeah, but, in the first half.
Which I hate, by the way. Even, I know some people thought it wasn't a good call. It's tough because Beverly is quick enough where he gets there in time, but I hate the pass and the crash. Yeah. I hate that so much. Like, guys get hurt doing that.
He picked up his fourth and fifth foul there midway through the fourth quarter, played a good chunk of that game there after that without picking up the sixth. And the Bulls, I thought, did a pretty good job of going right at him. They had a number of drives right after he picked up that fifth foul where they challenged him. Embiid obviously backed off of the rim protection a little bit, But they were
got DeRozan on the one. They got DeRozan on the one, and you were like, man, that was risky.
Yeah. He did go for a couple.
But yeah, they got him.
Tough game. I guess, how concerned are you about Harden and that right foot? Because that was the foot that he aggravated earlier in the year that caused him to miss that time. It looked like he came down after a drive in the second quarter there and was hobbling a little bit. Ended up playing 47 minutes there on the night. We didn't get a chance to speak to James. He was getting that foot looked at while we were interviewing Joel, and then he left while we were in the middle of that interview. So we didn't get a chance to really get an update on that foot. How concerned are you? I guess it's an impossible spot to put you in because we don't really have any information. But
because we don't have any information, and I think until I see him play again, I think the answer is very concerned on that one. Because, look, I think the big reason that the Sixers struggled last night, and you look at it, you look at that final play of regulation, right? De'Anthony Melton gets a steal. You mentioned Joel was the reason the Sixers were in the game. Also, De'Anthony Melton played one of his best games in a while. And that was the only other reason that the Sixers were in the game. You know, Maxey, you know, kind of volume scoring night for him, I would say. He gets the steal, him and Tobias, because DeRozan loses the ball. It wasn't just the Sixers with the ball slipping out of their hands, you know. But they get the ball, and Doc does not call timeout. Sixers have a chance to miraculously win a game at the end of regulation, and it would have been one of their recent miraculous wins. Like, how did they do that? Doc doesn't call timeout, and when Joel, I think he threw it to Tyrese or somebody else, but Joel points, give the ball to Harden, and the ball swings to Harden. And after the game, Doc said, no, I didn't. I called timeout because Tyrese and Joel had the ball. I wanted them to run kind of a two-man type game. That's the problem right there. Stop. That's it. That's the problem. Because Joel pointing to James Harden is what he should do on most nights. Right. That's how the Sixers offense operates. I get it. If Tyrese is going crazy, take the shot or whatever. But they had settled down and they had like 7-8 seconds left to run a play or whatever. Joel pointed to Harden. The ball went to him and he ran to go set a screen. That is what this team lives on. That is what they do. They end up getting a maxi shot that it is an open 26-footer, but it is a crappy shot in terms of it's a tie game. All you need is a deuce or a free throw.
Right.
Like, you know,
it's an open 26-footer, but if you execute, you get an open 17-footer for Joel.
Totally. And that's the issue, is that, like, swinging the ball to Harden was a no-go. And Harden, Derek, is that the worst game we've seen him play?
By far. Even worse than whatever happened in the second round.
I'm trying to think.
That might have been worse than Ben Simmons in the second round. Like
the Detroit last year when Ike Stewart was switching on him, I guess that was bad, but
I think that was more bad because that seemed to set the stage for that was like my tipping point when I said, Oh, I don't know if this is gonna work out. I don't know if that was actually a worse game. This is as bad as I've ever seen him play. Between the ineffectiveness and the passing and the defense, which is always sort of there, this was as bad of a point guard game as we've seen in quite a while.
No, it's true. It was just wild. I mean, he was.
And I mean, if he was hurt, like you understand why he can't get by someone when his foot is jacked up. But it would have been nice if I don't know, like don't play him 47, especially because he wasn't really helping you last night. Like I don't understand why. He had to be on the floor for so much on a bum foot, which I guess is maybe the one reason why I might be hopeful that it's not serious, but I don't trust Doc to know that mid-game. He always says, I don't know. Whenever he's asked about injuries, like, I don't know, I'm just coaching a game.
Well, and also Harden finished the game against Washington when he got hurt earlier this year, too, right? You know, he dealt with that foot issue, but then, oh, he's gone for a month. So we will see what happens there. I think either answer is bad, though, right? Because I didn't know he was capable of that. He's had his stinkers this year, don't get me wrong. He played a bad game against the Bulls without Embiid earlier this year. This was new level, man. This was actively harmful.
Yes.
And on both ends, obviously he's bad at defense. Like, he doesn't really try it or anything. But his drives and his missed shots, these air balls and shit, were leading to wide open dunks and layups on the other end. If you play Shake Milton 47 minutes... I think like normal
Shake
Milton.
You might
win
that game.
No, I think you definitely win that.
Yeah.
So it's strange because James Harden has been, and we have talked about this, and I think most people understand this, like He has been as good as the Sixers could have hoped for this season. He has been just a terrific offensive player. Obviously, three-point shooting has gone up. 20 and 10, leading the league in assists. He has turned the Sixers' biggest issue. How do you survive without Joel Embiid? They are like plus 3.7 when Harden is on the floor without Embiid. Their biggest issue into, okay, I got this. He has scored in isolation at the end of games when the Sixers have needed. He's been one of the best ISO players in the NBA. High usage ISO player. An even better one than Joel Embiid, believe it or not. That said, that's scary. That is a scary effort. I don't know what to say. Like, the Bulls just completely locked him up. And it was at the point where, you're right, like, is he hurt? Because they weren't getting any good shots in overtime, whether Embiid was on the floor, whether he wasn't on the floor. And the Sixers always get good shots. And the reason they always get good shots, part of it is Joel Embiid, but a huge part of it is James Harden does the right thing every time. Yep.
And I think for a good chunk of Sixers fans, even when he's succeeding, and I agree with you, I think he's exceeded any reasonable expectations. This is the best outcome you could have hoped for up to this point. And I am probably higher on Harden than I think a lot of fans are, because I think there's a lot of fans who are sitting here waiting for something like the status quo to return. And if you watch that game last night, it looked a lot like James Harden from last year. And if James doesn't have that burst, doesn't have that lift on his jumper, all of a sudden all that optimism comes into doubt. And I don't want to go there, because I think we have to see him play on that foot again to see if that was a one-night thing. But I think a lot of people might have watched that game and had that kind of fear, because it did look just a lot like a worse version of last year. And like you said, he's been a steadying force so often for this team this year, and a big chunk of the identity that they've built with him and Embiid and all of the role players. I mean, I just wrote about how all of their role players are getting way more catch and shoot shots than they ever have. A big chunk of that is because James Harden can reliably put them in spots where they can succeed and get them open shots, and has a court vision and a two-man game with Embiid. Like you said, they were surviving minutes without Joe on the floor. He and Paul Reed had some chemistry, although Paul's been up and down a little bit lately. But he's been freaking fantastic and given them that dynamic that they've never really had up to this point in Joel Embiid's career. And for that to be there, for there to be a little bit of concern whether that might go away a little bit. Like, that was a really bad performance, and you almost, it's like, all right, good, at least a foot is some kind of explanation for that, because that's as bad we've seen him play.
But you don't want also the like explanation.
That foot is, it's everything. Scary, terrifying.
Yeah,
I don't know. That was a bad one.
Sixers' fourth least efficient game of the season per Cleaning the Glass.
Oh, it God, is, I can't believe there were three others.
Well, I mean, they all happened before December 1st.
Okay, that makes all sense.
By the way, what happened, not December 1st, might have been like the 5th or something like that, but what happened? James Harden came back, and the Sixers have been the best offense in the league since then. So this is, it's an outlier game. I mean, God, they just came off playing, I know Indiana and Charlotte are bad. They hammered those teams. Yep. They hammered them. They hammered Cleveland. It was...
Even without any clutch production from Joel Embiid?
Yeah, exactly. Like, Joel is scoring 30 points and taking the fourth quarter off. I think, look, if James's foot is okay, I think you can reasonably write this one off. Like, I didn't know what the Bulls were doing. It seemed like the Bulls, something we saw against Cleveland, that this is, but it's something that I think Harden should have solved, is that they were shifting a lot. They were sending, multiple players to the strong side and loading up against Embiid's pick and roll. You had Vooch kind of playing up high against that, kind of around the free throw line, kicking the ball at all times. By the way, the kickball is just, it's a scourge on basketball. And honestly,
it should be a delay of game. I think it should be a delay of game.
Well, and it's also the best way to defend the Harden Embiid pick and roll, because if you do have the big up like Vooch was last night, okay, the pocket pass doesn't work because Harden is throwing it like right by your foot. Yep. And if you're waiting for it and your reflexes are quick enough. So, that worked, but that's something the Sixers should solve, Like, if that's how defenses guard it, like, you got to get that ball to the weak side for corner threes. And it just didn't happen enough. And like, look, credit to the Sixers. I thought the Bulls' offense was terrible all night, too, so I don't want to give them too much credit for their defense, but they did, again, Didn't get blown out. They don't get blown out anymore. You know, when they don't guard at all in Dallas, they still score a million points. When they don't score against Chicago, they guard that night. It's yeah. Look, it's a frustrating one, but the Harden thing, it's just that hasn't happened this season. It's really weird.
That was new. And if there is an explanation for the new with the injury, then you worry about that lingering. Otherwise, I'm not too concerned. But we got to see what happens with that injury report, with that foot, whether or not he plays in Chicago there on Wednesday, and how he looks. And then you've got the other injury, Jalen McDaniels with the hip, played 9 minutes, did not look good doing so. He has not really looked like himself since trying to come back. We'll see what happens there. He was, I don't want to say he was a big part of that bench unit, but he was sort of helping that bench unit find an identity with the sort of switchable players around James. He's been pretty bad and pretty inconsistent in whether or not he's on even on the floor lately. That's something to monitor as well. Overall, the bench struggled outside of Melt.
Yeah, Melt was good though. Yeah, something.
Yep, it is something. That is true. You don't really see Melton take 12 threes all that often. Good to see. And 4 steals. It was real good. It was real good.
Yeah. And he was closing because they didn't have P.J. Tucker. And I do think it would have been a game for P.J. Tucker to play small ball because B-Ball Paul just did not really have it in last night's game. And that's okay. That happens. And I think something we have seen over this recent winning streak is, hey, if B-Ball Paul doesn't have it or somebody else doesn't have it, like Doc will go to somebody else in the second half because there are enough good players. Shake Milton is a perfect example of, okay, we'll roll with you tonight. You know, or, you know, Daniel House starts the game and Daniel House is fine. I think him getting minutes, while I don't think he's part of the normal playoff rotation, I think there might be matchups where he is required to play 10 to 15 minutes a game.
Or nights where somebody is injured or ineffective, bring him in. Bring him in. He's been okay. And credit to Doc, you know, because Paul's had, what was the other game where Paul Reed didn't play in the second half? Cleveland. Credit to Doc, he continues to go back to him. You know, he'll take Paul out for the second half and go small ball with PJ or go, you know, wherever he may go. But the next game, Paul Reed's your backup center. And I think that is the right approach to have. You know, if Paul doesn't have it one night, I'm fine making adjustment. But the only adjustment I don't want to see is going to Dwayne Dedman or Montrezl Harrell as your backup center on the next game. And Doc has resisted that so far. And quite frankly, Doc's been pretty good here down the stretch. I disagree with some of the decisions he made last night. But I think
Harden if he was hurt. Yeah, that's
playing Harden if he was hurt. I probably would have taken a timeout. Maybe a challenge of Joel one, but I think that was a foul when he fouled out there in double overtime.
I don't think he was going to win that one.
I don't think he was going to win it anyway. He challenged it maybe just because of circumstance and time and situation, but you weren't winning that. But no, I think he's been real good here since the All-Star break. Credit there as well.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, I guess we will close this one out. It seems like there has been a shift in the MVP race. I don't have the odds in front of me, but I'm pretty sure Joe is now the odds-on favorite in Vegas to win it. What do you think is the biggest reasoning for that?
Yeah, and I don't think it's something I anticipated. You know, I remember our pod probably about a month ago where, you know, it looked like Jokic was going to run away with this thing just because of the, you know, the voting and kind of all the noise you had heard about it. Jokic had a terrible couple weeks, and Joe had a great couple weeks, I think, is the real explanation.
And perhaps more specifically, the Nuggets had a terrible couple weeks, too. And the Sixers now have Sixers ahead of, not in terms of one loss record, but yeah, the Nuggets have one more loss than the Sixers do. Sixers have a better overall record by a half a game, even though the Nuggets are the top seed in the West. So yeah, catching up in the standings certainly helps too.
Yeah. So it's been a great couple of weeks, and Joe scores, like, I don't think Joel was good by his standards last night. And look, I mean, he played 44 minutes. So
yep.
To take this with a little bit of a grain of salt, you know, 37 points on 11 of 22 shooting. That's like his worst game in like 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. What's his streak up to in consecutive 30-point games?
9, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
And it was 50%. And it was plus 50% shooting, which he barely got. He did it.
Yeah, no, he's exactly.
He's been tremendous. He's a machine. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And I think he has kind of taken the lead. Do you think there's probably something to, because Joe has played so well and Jokic's team has faltered, that I think people are starting to realize, I don't think we're giving this guy 3 in a row if it's not completely obvious here.
Yeah, it does seem like some of the campaigning, whether that's Daryl campaigning or Perk's comments or just people pushing back on a 3 in a row, it seems like that has had some kind of an impact. When you combine that then with Joe playing ridiculous basketball, the Sixers winning 8 in a row, Joe winning the matchup against Jokic and Jokic and the Nuggets faltering, I think all of that has sort of combined to shift the narrative a little bit. Whether or not that actually shifts votes, we will see.
Look, but I think Joe has moved to the front of it, though. I just think he's got the story, but he's also, he's kicking ass. He's completely
He's having a Kevin Durant-type season as a 7-foot center anchoring a defense. Like, it's absurd what he's asked. Like, what's his true shooting at right now? Like, 65%?
Yeah.
While scoring 33 a night and anchor, it's absurd. It's legitimately one of the greatest scoring seasons in NBA history. And I think that's where I kind of come down. It's like, all right, Jokic is completely unique. Like, a big man averaging a triple-double and shooting like 60-whatever% from the field is absurd. He breaks our brains and statistical models. But Joe's kind of doing that too. And he's doing that while having way more defensive impact and responsibility than the Nuggets. Nuggets, who are as bad of a defense over the last couple of weeks as any team in the league. And look, the Sixers defense is up and down. All right. Up and down.
But Joel is.
A lot of down, but more up than Nuggets.
Any up is because of Joe, though.
Yes. Yes. And you can see when he dials it up, what kind of impact he can make. You understand with the workload he has on offense, why that's not an every night kind of thing. But the impact he makes is just truly absurd. Really absurd.
The only offense that the Sixers got last night was like maxi runouts after Joel blocks. You know, some of the I thought his defensive performance last week in the Sixers' biggest game of the month, in my opinion, in Cleveland, was unbelievable. Like, yep. He's just, you know, he's playing the roamer and he's meeting guys at the rim. He's certainly going for more blocks now, I think, and he has said this on the road trip. I'm pretty sure he said it before, too. He said, like, look, it's time to go. It's time to actually start ratcheting up the defense, because I think he realizes, I got to have this by the time the playoffs start. And, you know, maybe I don't do it all year because I do have a massive offensive load. But, you know, let's get the car in gear before the playoffs start. And I think we have seen that for the most part. Frustrating game last night. But he's really, I mean, and the offense is just, look, I know we've seen him dominate bad teams. The stuff he was doing against Charlotte and Indiana, like, it's just like, it was just a joke how easy it was. Like, it's crazy. What did he shoot, like 17 of 21 against Charlotte? It was insane. Like, it was like Larry Bird shit. He was like pointing to a spot and saying, I'm going to score here in this way and you can't stop it. And he did. And it's crazy, man. And look, I know the all-in-one metrics are under assault because Nikola Jokic and Alex Caruso have unlocked the code to both of those things. But I do think you are seeing, like, wherever you fall in this debate, Joel is a way better defender than Jokic.
Yeah.
Way better. Yep. And that needs to be factored in because the Nuggets have a scheme that kind of hides Jokic the best. You know, they have him up against the screen. And they have, you know, that backside guy rotate, and you see it can look really bad if these other guys aren't locked in. Joel, you can do a lot of different things. You can have him at the rim like a traditional center, unlike Jokic, and you can have him do other things. You can have him switch when you need to. You can have him, you know, he's hard hedging more than you think and trapping and stuff. You know, he did it a little bit against DeRozan and LaVine in last night's game. So I don't really want to put down Jokic. I think he's a terrific basketball player, but I have seen enough of the threads of his defense on Reddit, and I have seen enough noise and enough Kia MVP ladders to understand that Joel is probably taking the lead there with Giannis also lurking too, I'd imagine.
Yeah. No, and I do think that the all-in-one defensive metrics are a key part, because I think even Joe's, like, biggest supporters will acknowledge, all right, Joe might score a bunch, he scores really efficiently, but Jokic, what he does offensively is unprecedented, it's really impactful, and the Nuggets really rely on him. So if you then add in, oh, well, Jokic is an underrated defender and maybe is just as impactful as other big men, it's real easy to talk yourself into Jokic being the best player in the league. I think you have to fundamentally understand how flawed those defensive metrics are to really understand the gap between Joe and Jokic on the defensive side of the court to really understand Joe's value to the team and what he brings as a big man. It's entirely unique. Like, there's nobody who's relied upon as much on both ends of the floor. And I do think, you know, I don't want to say he's going to win it this year, because you've got some massive games against the Bucks and the Nuggets and the Celtics that are going to define a lot of the narrative. If you think that Joe has an overwhelming narrative advantage and this can't change here over the last couple of weeks of the season, you are wrong. Like, yeah, they can change that on a dime. A couple of bad games against the Nuggets and the Bucks, and we are back to a completely different conversation. But I think he is in a good chance where, if he takes care of business, and if the Sixers take care of business against a tough schedule, I do think he will win it.
If they win those games, I would be stunned if he does not win the MVP. Yeah.
And by the way, that's completely absurd. MVP should not come down to one or two matchups in April or late March to decide it. This is sort of like the argument we had last year in reverse, when it seemed like Joe lost the MVP with losses to the Nuggets and the Bucks. It should not come down to this, but I think over the last couple of weeks, it's definitely benefited him.
And by the way, he won't say it. He believes that he lost those MVPs because the Sixers lost those games, no matter how he played in those games, but they did lose them with... You know, I remember those games last year. You know, Bones Highland went nuts in one of those games. Bones Highland's not even on the freaking Nuggets anymore. And Giannis blocked Joel's shot at the end of the at the other game. So, yeah, I think he's had a good couple weeks last night, notwithstanding. I certainly did not see, down and out Joel after last night's game. Like, I think for most of the Sixers, outside of the Harden thing, you could say, okay, last night was terrible. Yep. We're winning more than 2/3 of our games. It's okay. Like, it's fine. But you just need to make sure Harden is okay. And if that is the case, I think you move on and they're probably going to keep winning a bunch of games because last night felt like an anomaly.
That they will. All right. I think that is a good enough place here to cut it off. Another game coming up here tomorrow against the same Bulls, hopefully a little bit more aesthetically pleasing. Thank you, Rich, for jumping on, and we will talk to you soon.
See you, man.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.